the GP Plus Careers Podcast.
Are you a GP hoping to diversify your career? Perhaps you've got a passion for women's health or have ambitions to be an expedition GP. Or maybe you've just always wondered, what would it be like to be a GP working in a prison? Well, this will hopefully be the podcast for you. My name's Sophie Lumley. I'm a First Five GP in the West Midlands and also a training programme director. I certainly fell into the above category, and I was keen to start this podcast to find out about the breadth of career options available to me, my colleagues and my trainees. I've been lucky enough to interview fellow GPs who've had some of these extra roles. They've told me what their role involves, how they got there, and the tips and advice that they have for those hoping to follow in their footsteps. I really hope you enjoy listening and feel as inspired as I have in speaking to them. So hi everyone, thank you for joining us today. I'm really pleased today that we're joined by Tom Purchase, who is an academic GP in South Wales. Over to you, Tom. Please can you describe for us what your role involves?
I'm Tom. I'm a First Five GP. I CCT'd in 2021 and I work at Cardiff University in South Wales. So my role currently, in September I started a PhD at the Division of Population Medicine at Cardiff University. I have an interest in patient safety and I work with the patient safety team at the division. And my current week is broken down into a 20% clinical role and then an 80% academic role with the university. So one day a week I'm working in a GP practice as a salaried GP, and then for the rest of the week I'm working on the PhD. So for the academic days, you know, sometimes I can work from home, mostly try to go to the office because obviously it's very nice to see colleagues and catch up with others, and has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that I have a 16-month-old at home who likes to open all of my drawers and tap away at the keys on my laptop. But the academic role itself, week by week, can be very varied. So right now, for instance, I've just started the doctoral fellowship, and so my days are very geared towards carrying out my specific research project that I applied for funding for. So that project, just to give you a bit of background, that I'm working on now is called the Advocacy Study, and it's exploring parental advocacy within primary care for unwell children. So how do we support parents to speak up more effectively when they have an unwell child? How do we incorporate their voice into the management of unwell children? Hopefully down the line, with an aim to reduce healthcare associated harms from occurring to their child. So I'll be doing that project as part of my PhD for the next 3 to 4 years. So there's, you know, a fair amount of work to be getting on with there. But the role within the university, although the bulk of it is certainly research, isn't just research. So I do a fair amount of teaching as well. I'm involved with modules related to evidence-based medicine, quality improvement. I teach on an intercalation module for improving clinical care for patients, and I support, you know, the ISCE examinations, the interviews for admission for medical students, and communication skills and clinical skills. So it's a very varied role week on week between the two. But I guess what's different maybe from some of the other people you've had on this podcast is that it feels like quite a separate role. It's not really, you know, patient facing. So it feels like having two very different jobs.
That's really interesting, and really interesting to hear about the project that you're working on. I suppose some people may know a bit about what academic GP involves, but others may not. When you're doing your research and working on your project, what sort of activities are you doing in that time?
Well, that can also vary a fair amount depending on where you are within the project. So I'm right at the beginning. So the sort of activities I'm doing now are very much in the planning stages, making sure that the timeline for all the things I need to do are kind of thought out, and specifically applying for things like ethical approval. So my project will involve talking to parents and healthcare professionals down the line. But first of all, I'm going to do a literature review. So there's a lot of organizing what I need to do now, which will be around finding the papers and organizing how I'm going to conduct the literature review, but with a mind to, you know, being aware that I need to plan the next stages and when I'm going to start recruiting to talk to participants, and how I'm going to do that, you know, the streams that you're going to go down to try and find appropriate participants. So there's a lot of things that have to happen in parallel. So it can get quite busy, which is why time management and organization are, I think, quite important, and things I'd certainly need to upskill myself in.
So that's a really interesting point then, I suppose, to move on to our next section around sort of your career journey. Congratulations on getting some funding for your doctoral fellowship.
Thank
Can you.
You
tell us a little bit about your career journey into that? How did you come to be doing a PhD?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think what's important to say off the bat is that I wasn't academic initially. You know, when I got out of medical school and during F1, F2, and even during GP training, I wasn't necessarily academically minded. I was interested in it and, you know, had been involved in a couple of projects here and there. But, you know, it wasn't necessarily what I was going to pursue. I think I wanted to focus on the clinical aspect of things and get through the training. And then when I was coming towards the end of GP training, I started to think, well, actually, what else is there? What's available? What is there around? So I asked one of my colleagues who I was working with, who was an academic GP, kind of what she was up to and how to get involved. And she put me in touch with my now supervisor called Professor Andrew Carson-Stevens, who runs the patient safety team at the division. And so we started working on a project, which then helped me, I suppose, develop that interest in patient safety and know that I wanted to pursue or at least look into this career a little bit more. And then I applied for something called the Academic Fellow Scheme, which is in Cardiff. There is a similar scheme in Swansea, but the scheme itself is a two-year scheme where you have the opportunity as a qualified GP to spend 2 days a week as a GP in a practice and then 3 days a week with the university doing a number of things. And that's normally broken down into teaching, research, and personal development. So I applied for that job, started working with the patient safety team on a number of different projects, which then helped me to develop my interests and skills, learning how research really worked, which I think can be quite daunting when you don't know, you know, when you aren't involved in it actively, because there's so much that you can learn. Started a postgraduate certificate in epidemiology because you're supported to do that sort of personal development work, which is funded. And essentially from that, started getting involved in a project that was looking into incident reports and pediatric safety issues and how parents were involved in that. And then that led to me applying for a grant with the RCGP Scientific Foundation Board. And the Scientific Foundation Board hand out grants every year to primary care-based research. So I applied for one of these grants, thankfully was awarded one a couple of years ago, which was a really great opportunity because it gave me the chance to focus on one project, which, you know, as a team we'd put together to look in more detail at these incident reports. And that then led to the foundational work and the skills and building me up as a researcher so that I was suitable to then apply for the doctoral fellowship and the PhD. So it was kind of a stepwise process, and then sent the application to the NIHR and was awarded that earlier this year. So in August, I finished the academic fellow scheme, and then I started the PhD in September this year.
That's really interesting. And I suppose it sounds like many others who've got academic careers who have this sort of very iterative journey where one thing leads to another, and each is about making sure you've got the funding to move on. And I suppose it sounds quite similar what you've got in South Wales to the English scheme, where there's something for those who may not be aware called the In Practice Fellowship Scheme through the NIHR, which is a similar sort of two-year scheme with some balance of clinical and academic work. So it sounds like you've been really well supported there to sort of develop the right skills. Would you say there's any specific requirements that people would need to start getting into academic work if they've never done any before?
Firstly, I would, off the back of what you just said there, say that the level of support absolutely has been immense. And I think the benefits of being part of a scheme, especially with someone, you know, like a university like Cardiff, you then have access to all of those skills and advice and the range of experience that your colleagues have in order to help build you up and, you know, point you in the right direction and tell you what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing, and kind of how to manage your time. So being part of a scheme like that is hugely worthwhile if there is one around, or if you get the opportunity to apply for one. In terms of specific skills that you'd otherwise need before starting, I would say Possibly not really. I think you'd need to maybe demonstrate that you have an interest. And obviously, personally, I got in touch with someone and said, can I, you know, get involved in a project you're doing? And I now know from experience that, you know, a lot of academics do have multiple projects working in parallel, and they're often very keen to have, you know, support from anyone who's willing to give their time. So getting in touch with someone to kind of see what opportunities are available and just discussing what research they're involved with, I would certainly recommend, because then you can build it up from there. So you don't, I've obviously now completed a postgraduate certificate in epidemiology, but I didn't have research qualifications, as it were, before starting. I think it's a case of asking the right questions, and I suppose just getting stuck in. And once you start to build your experience, you can then, you notice that doors open and more opportunities become available. And then if you keep saying yes to things, then it can snowball. And I think that's kind of how I ended up getting to where I am now, to be honest. It's just a case of saying yes and doing as much as you can.
You mentioned when you were telling us about your career journey about some funding opportunities that you've had through your fellowship and through the RCGP grants that you had as well. I suppose it would be useful for people to have a sense of how easy it is to get funding, or how one might go about getting funding, or where to look if, again, if they're starting along their journey and not quite sure which direction to go in.
I think where you are on your, you know, individual journey pathway will dictate where you can look for that, certainly, because I was only obviously really able to apply for the NIHR fellowship off the back of having 2 to 3 years of, you know, really trying to build up a research portfolio. So early on, things like the RCGP Scientific Foundation Board, I think, are really good schemes because they're slightly smaller amounts of funding for a shorter amount of time that are very targeted towards kind of early career researchers, maybe people who don't have as much experience but do have the right support, who have an idea that they would like to pursue. And that then gives you, I suppose, the protected time and resources to be able to really explore it. So that's a slightly, you know, a smaller pot of money that would, I think, open up a lot of doors. And then when you progress beyond that, you know, if you are going to apply for doctoral fellowships, there are lots of different options and different funders available that have different requirements. The NIHR tend to be quite good for clinical researchers, which is why I applied for them. And they have a kind of different remit. So that's what's important to look into as well, is kind of what other funders are interested in and what they want to kind of give the money towards. So they have a very kind of public health geared incentive as well. So that's how I ended up going for the NIHR funding. In a kind of convoluted way, what actually happens, because I'm in Wales, that funding is actually now handed over to an organisation supported by Welsh Government called Health and Care Research Wales. So my official title is Health and Care Research Wales NIHR Doctoral Fellow, which is a bit of a mouthful, but it's to show that the pathway was through the NIHR Fellowship, because there are so many different pathways, but I'm actually working with and supported by Health and Care Research Wales.
It certainly sounds like a snazzy title, a bit of a mouthful, but it's helpful to understand exactly how you got there as well, I suppose, for people hearing about your role. I suppose, as reassurance for those listening, when you're thinking about applying for your doctoral funding, you know, people might be sat there thinking, well, you know, I know that I earn enough to pay my mortgage and do what I need to do as part of my clinical role. If I was to pursue a career a bit like yours at the moment, where you're doing 1 day clinical or 2 day clinical and then doing academia, is there some funding built into your PhD and other bits of your academic career, which funds your time as well?
So my funding now is, you know, covers my salary from an academic perspective, absolutely. And I think that's something you need to consider when looking into different funders, because some funders will give you a similar salary to as if you were working clinically, and others won't. So another benefit, obviously, of kind of going down the NIHR route is, because they are clinically oriented, that is accounted for. Starting off, there was a bit of a hit financially in order to pursue a academic career, because working as part of the academic fellow scheme, you know, it was 5 days a week, 2 days, obviously GP, 3 days, non-GP. But the money was a bit less than if I had just worked as a full-time GP. So I suppose there was a, you know, there was a view to knowing that things would get better down the line And now I'm in a position where being funded by the NHR, you know, is probably equivalent to if I was working clinically, but then I can also top that up with actually having a clinical role as well.
Okay, that's really helpful to know for people. And I suppose one thing that I always think when I talk to academics is that I get a sense that whilst they'd be very happy to work six clinical sessions, when they're academic, they may work four clinical and four academic. They certainly, if they weren't doing the academic, wouldn't be working eight clinical sessions. So I suppose it's one of those things where, you know, it helps give it a nice sort of balance. But that's helpful to know as reassurance for people that there is funding that allows you to do this in a very viable way alongside your clinical role. So just thinking about some of the benefits, Tom, for you, what do you think are the benefits for you of being an academic GP and how it enhances your clinical role as well?
I think there are lots. I didn't think it was very academic of me, Sophie, to just give you my opinion on this.
Okay.
So thankfully, I work with a range of academic GPs within the division. So I sought their thoughts and their advice. So this is a bit of a collation of that.
Oh, fantastic.
And
I think of nothing less from an academic person who teaches on an evidence-based medicine module.
Yeah, it's certainly not me just being worried that I'm going to miss some important bits that other people are going to pick me up on. But it comes down to variety, time, impact, and autonomy. So a huge variety week to week, a very varied career, which you can shape yourself depending on the opportunities that come and what things you'd like to pursue. It gives you a chance to meet and work with colleagues throughout the UK, but also internationally, often with very varied backgrounds and experiences. So you get to learn a lot, you get to develop new skills. You know, there might be some travel involved, which is always very enjoyable. I've personally been able to attend multiple conferences, present posters, present seminars, you know, meet colleagues and network in that capacity, which you don't always get the opportunity to do when you just work clinically, especially if you don't have the funding to go to these sorts of conferences, because they can be very expensive. The skills that you learn and the professional development, I think, is also a huge bonus, because you are given the protected time and the headspace. A lot of my colleagues were saying, you know, just having the space to do what you want to do and to pursue your own interests is something you don't necessarily get to do when you're working a busy clinical job. And then when you get to go to things like conferences, you also then, you know, you're aware of the most up-to-date research and the hot topics and what's on people's minds. The benefits of the clinical role with the academic role, I think, certainly works both ways. So my learning from my academic role, I believe, has positively impacted how I consult with patients in the practice. I think working clinically a little bit less during the week maybe gives me a little bit more energy, you know, and empathy and compassion and everything else that you need in order to do that role well. But continuing to work clinically also frequently reminds me of the importance of the research that we're doing. And I think it genuinely shapes the projects that we put together as a team based on our collective experience and what we think might be important to patients. And then that's supplemented by the fact that we have the opportunity to more and more involve members of the public within our research as well, to get their perspectives. So I think there's a very clear link between the clinical and the academic role, and I think they complement each other very well. But additionally, I think then that the kind of difference you can make is a bit broader. So in terms of why you might like to get into it, I think all GPs have a hugely positive impact on their communities. And I think academia then gives you the potential to influence change and have an impact on clinical care more broadly. So your reach for making a difference maybe becomes a little bit wider. It's very sociable. I don't know of any academics that work in isolation, certainly not within our division. I work with some great colleagues. They have a wide variety of interests. Everyone's always genuinely wants to know what you're up to and offers support and advice. There's opportunities for teaching, which I don't think you'd necessarily, obviously lots of GPs do teaching and supervise medical students and trainees, but not necessarily, I suppose, in as many different areas. And as I mentioned, the autonomy to kind of work on something that's important to you as an individual and what you're passionate about. And then as a final note for me personally, just I'm obviously mentioned the support earlier, but the support I've received from the director of the academic fellow scheme, who's Dr. Harry Ahmed, and my supervisor, Prof. Carson Stevens, has just been, I think, invaluable in terms of being able to do what I wanted to do. So all of that kind of comes together, I think, to make a very satisfying, balanced job role.
Awesome. I mean, you're certainly selling it to me. I was just wondering whether there were any downsides for you. I mean, you mentioned that potentially...
No downsides at all. Okay. Let's not talk about the downsides. Everyone just... start working in academia, please.
You mentioned earlier that people need to be mindful that initially, if you're working a bit less clinical, there might be some financial considerations. Are there any other downsides you think it's worth being aware of before people head straight into this?
No, absolutely. My colleagues also weren't backwards in coming forwards with what they felt the downsides were as well. So one of the common ones was that compared to maybe other roles and other people you've had on the podcast, there is some more long-term uncertainty about your job security. Mainly because there are some fixed-term contracts, especially early on. And obviously, in my experience, for example, I've been able to continue working academically because I've been applying for funding and have been awarded funding. So if I hadn't got that funding, I'm not entirely sure I'd necessarily still be within this job. I would have obviously applied for more funding, but then that's more work. So it is certainly a challenge. And when you balance that with having a family, and having two roles that are distinct but both quite busy, it can get difficult at times. So there's a lot of juggling, a lot of time management. And there are more hard deadlines, I think, within academia maybe than elsewhere that you need to work towards. So you do need to be a little bit more flexible sometimes with when you maybe need to put in a little bit of extra work and dedicate more of your time, you know, sometimes outside of normal working hours in order to, you know, get an application in for something, you know, for funding or a paper or something like that. So they were the main drawbacks. I wouldn't say they're insurmountable drawbacks. And I think personally, anyone who's been able to get through, you know, medical school, F1, F2, GP training, I think everyone is very capable of, you know, managing these things. It's just a case of, as I said, having the right support and motivation and really thinking about why you want to do what you do. Because obviously, if you decide actually the level of effort I'm putting in here isn't matching my interest for doing this, then obviously it's maybe not the right thing for you to be doing. But I think if you should at least try and then see how you feel about it.
So that's very reassuring. I suppose leads very nicely into our next question about what advice you have for those hoping to follow in your footsteps or pursue an academic career. You mentioned there about finding good supervision, about finding balance and be willing to put in a bit of extra work when it counts or when you've got deadlines. What other advice might you have for those hoping to start out?
Trying to sound academic again, a theme that's been running through all of your podcasts with your other guests who've all been really interesting and informative is that I think almost all of them have said that word of mouth and speaking to people has been the initial method of getting involved in any additional interest or topic you'd like to get involved with. So asking questions, finding who you work with or anyone on your, say, if you're on a training scheme, you know, are there any GPs or anyone else working academically that you could get advice from, which is obviously exactly what I did and found it hugely beneficial. But just asking what projects they're involved with, how are they doing it, where are they working, what methods are they using, trying to find anything that you might find personally interesting or, something that you might like to develop. There are academic groups you can go to seek advice from. So there's a Society of Academic Primary Care, a very large group of academic primary care researchers, and they host regional and national conferences every year. So attending those, I think, would be a good place to network and to seek advice. There's also a group called the Primary Care Academic Collaborative, or PACT, who are a research network of, again, primary care researchers, and I'm sure they'd be very happy for anyone who's interested in getting involved to get in touch with them. I'd say have a look at your local schemes. Things I'm going to assume very different between the nations. So if anyone is within South Wales or South East Wales and would like to, for instance, look into the academic scheme that I was involved with, I'm sure Harry Ahmed, who's the director, would be more than happy to discuss that with you. And as I mentioned, there is also a similar scheme in Swansea. So just seeing what's around you and what's available, but then also slightly maybe broader national opportunities like going to the RCGP annual conference if you can, because a huge amount of, you know, huge breadth of research is being discussed there. And again, lots of opportunities to meet people. In conclusion, I would say go for it. Speak to as many people as you can. if you are in training, see what's going on. If you're out of training, see what schemes are available to you locally, and just try to get involved in as many things as you can.
Great. So it sounds like the real way is to speak to people and be opportunistic. And that's a really helpful, I suppose, starting block for people is find out where your local academic GPs hang out, find out what they're involved in and follow your interests. That's been really helpful and informative, Tom. What we're asking people to end on is their sort of highlight or sort of best moment or top tip for those who are hoping to pursue the career and you reflecting on your own academic GP career to date.
Personally, I think a highlight for me over the last few years have been on two occasions I've been able to go to Geneva to support some work that's been undertaken by the World Health Organization, which is certainly something I don't think I would have been able to do if I'd continued to purely work clinically. So on the first occasion, I attended a global expert consultation being run by the World Health Organization's Patient Safety Flagship, and they were discussing how to implement their Global Patient Safety Action Plan, which was really fascinating, and I got to meet several world experts, you know, in the field of patient safety, which was great, and develop an understanding of how kind of global issues are prioritized and discussed. And then I got to go back a couple of months later to support the World Health Organization's analysis of a global patient safety survey that they'd conducted. So working directly with the Patient Safety Flagship and being able to kind of build relationships with them, which was really valuable and enjoyable, and coupled with obviously being able to go to Geneva and do a bit of sightseeing. And, you know, one of them was around Christmas time, so there were some very nice markets we got to go to. So I think those sorts of opportunities, as you said about being opportunistic, you know, and really capitalizing on the connections that the teams you work with have, I think that's where the enjoyment has really come from, on top of being able to make a difference with the research itself.
Fantastic. As I say, you've certainly sold it to me, I'm sure other academic GPs would say similar things about the units that they work in, and there's lots of opportunities out there. So,
Sophie, you're very welcome to move to Cardiff, and I'll see if somebody can offer you a job.
Yeah, I'm certainly tempted, but thank you very much for giving up your time this afternoon.
We'll certainly
share the links that you've mentioned there around PACT and Society of Academic Primary Care and other places people might want to look to start looking at their career into academic GP that I'm sure they will be inspired to pursue after today. So thank you very much, Tom, for giving up your time.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
We hope that this careers podcast has motivated and inspired you to explore the variety of career options available as a GP. Speak to your appraiser, your local training programme directors, or perhaps join our RCGP mentoring programme for further support to diversify your career. Thanks for listening and good luck.
The GP Plus Careers Podcast.